and welcome to the Popmatic Podcast. This is February show, right? Right? Okay. February is Black History Month, right? And let's see. African Americans invented blues, jazz, hip-hop, arguably then rock and roll, too.
Rock and roll.
So, like, all of American music that's actually American. So we're going to talk about the Grammys today. And, or maybe why the Grammys suck. Maybe a lot. And we're also, if we have time, what's going to tickle our fancy. But in the studio today is...
Lisa from the Young Adult Disc.
Amanda.
Crystal.
Bill is off today in preparation for Nevermore. Karen has decided to go on a hiatus from the podcast.
Oh, we miss you, Karen.
I know. It's bad because I'm going to ask a question about books later that I know that she would know the answer to. So hopefully she'll be lurking in the comments section. But Lisa is here now, or should be here more often than before.
Yeah.
So that's, that's really good. Some of the weird time confusion that we've had before in shows, this might take some of the magic away, is because we record like a week or two before the month.
Oh. So we've got a whole week to take out people's expletives.
Exactly. So there's that weird, like, what time is things really going to... When were we recording and when was the holiday? I mean, Adam Dean's new theme music is really psychedelic and it kind of shifts me around chronologically, but that's really kind of what happens. But telling you what's coming up at the library is Crystal.
All right. We've got two great events coming up in March, so I'm going to tell you all about them. First up is another songwriting workshop series. There'll be three sessions this time around. The first is March 3rd, 2012, and the session title is Taking Care of Business. Do you have a plan? This is going to be presented by Larry Sheridan and Robin Ruddy. Do you have visions of making it in the music business? Do you want to make money with your music? Do you need to find money for your projects? Every artist is a business, and we all need a plan. So come learn how to create a custom business plan for your personal goals. By the time you leave the session, you will have an outline of a business plan in place. This 90-minute workshop will start at 10:30, and it's free and open to the public. Come a few minutes early for complimentary coffee or tea. It's going to get our creative juices flowing. This event is graciously sponsored by the Nashville Public Library Foundation, so we got to give them a shout out. The next weekend, after March 3rd, Movies at Maine is delighted to present Walter Hill's directorial debut, Hard Times, on Saturday, March 10th at 2 p.m. And this is at the Nashville Public Library downtown in the Maine Auditorium. Hard Times takes place in New Orleans in 1933, and in those days, words didn't say much. Charles Bronson stars as Cheney, a man who knocks people down for a living. James Coburn plays Speed, his fast-talking manager. Hard Times deals with the bare-knuckle boxing matches during the Depression. So don't go looking for metaphors in this movie. It's about men beating the crap out of each other. Also, make sure you listen to our Popmatic podcast interview with the director of Hard Times, Walter Hill. In this rare interview, Mr. Hill discusses the making of Hard Times and other movies he has worked on. So remember, come to the Nashville Public Library on Saturday, March 10th at 2 p.m. to see Hard Times. And as Bill always says, remember, it's free.
I like men beating the crap out of each other. That was like, you sold me right there. Okay, so the Grammys are going to be on February 12th on a TV station called CBS. But for me, the Grammys are kind of like that People at Walmart blogs, you know, because I think, man, I don't know who you are, but that outfit is horrible. Like, so that's pretty much my experience with the Grammys, because so like, I don't really get why certain people are nominated and other people aren't. And I think sometimes there's confusions about the categories, but hopefully we'll work through that a little bit in our discussion. But Amanda's going to talk about the big three categories and what the difference in the categories are to start us off.
Yeah, I can't unlock all the mysteries of the Grammys because, honestly, no one can. But it seems the big three always are Record of the Year, album of the year, and then, of course, my favorite song of the year. Record of the year basically is about the song itself. It's about the artists, the engineers, the recording people, the mixers. It's kind of like the overall production of the song. Album of the year is... Do we even have albums anymore? I have no idea with all
right.
the downloads.
That's valid point.
Very interesting.
Yeah, but it's like the whole album, like it would be Adele's 21, is one of them that's nominated for Album of the Year. So it's all the tracks on the album. And then, of course, Song of the Year is a songwriter's award, which I think they should limit to number of songwriters. If it takes, you know, 8 people to write a song, you're probably not going to win Song of the Year because... You know, you don't need 8 people to write a song. But
it
that's
doesn't
just,
take a village. Is
yeah,
that what you're
yes,
saying?
Yeah, songs are not like children. They don't take a village. So I've kind of talked about earlier about Adele, and I think she's going to be a big winner. I'm predicting this right now. You may quote me on this. Because it seems like for me that Adele's songs are good and she's been commercially successful. And so I think that a lot of times the Grammys are not about artistic achievement. They're more about commercial achievement with maybe some artistic stuff thrown in on the side. Plus, she's kind of been a critical darling the whole year, so I'd be really surprised if her songs and her... Because she's in all three. Rolling in the Deep for record and song, and then, of course, 21 for album of the year.
I think it's going to be like that year that you had... what was the sitar player's daughter?
Nora Jones.
Remember, she was just bedecked in them? She was just, like, carrying...
She had to get a little
wagon. She had, like, 10 Grammys. And I think if Adele wins all the things that she should win... It'll be like that.
Yeah.
She's garlanded herself in Grammys.
But I think that she's, I mean, I think Nora Jones earned them too. I mean, I think I like Nora Jones, and I think Adele has definitely earned them. So I hope that, you know, she gets what she should. I'm not sure why, I made fun of the number of songwriters because Kanye has a song, All of the Lights, in that he did with, well, first of all, it was him and Rihanna and Kid Cudi and Fergie. So there's 4 artists already. Plus, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 songwriters, so it takes 9 people to, you know, get this song going. And I listened to it, and I'm sorry, Kanye, but that's not a good song.
Well, like, maybe I'm thinking, though, that some of those people might be the people's real names. Like, Stacey Ferguson is Fergie, right?
That could be. Right? See, I hadn't done the math on that,
yeah.
So yeah.
So... But there's still 4 other people. So
now we're down to 8.
So there's if 7. Kanye didn't, like, produce the track, right, there's probably, like, the producer, Fergie, Malik Jones, Warren Trotter, right? Where's Rihanna, right?
She doesn't write. She just sings. Yeah. She's just pretty.
I mean, her real name isn't Warren Trotter. her real name might be Warren Trotter. So
who do you think should win this Song of the Year category?
I'm kind of on the fence between the Rolling in the Deep from Adele and the Grenade from Bruno Mars, because I kind of like his stuff. Gave you all I had and you tossed it in the trash. You tossed it in the trash, you did. To give me all your love is all I ever ask. Because what you don't understand is I catch a grenade for you.
Now, was that in Song of the Year category?
Yeah, the Song of the Year. Yeah, it's Record of the Year, too. Yeah, those are both. Okay. So I think that's a pretty good song. But, you know, if Adele's is her and her songwriting partner, that's it, too. Done. And, like, everybody else has 84 people involved, so...
Now, Bon Iver probably doesn't have 84 people involved.
Yeah, it's just him. He's Justin Verner. Just him.
Yes. So he's the one person that has as many nominations in those 3 categories as Adele.
Mm-hmm.
So 4 nominations.
What do we think about him?
We should lock him in the closet.
Well, I had not heard of him at all until I got to this podcast preparation, which I didn't do very much of. But I don't understand how it's in 4 categories. It's not on a commercial. It seems like these kind of songs you hear everywhere, and it gets to be the song of the year because it was everywhere. Everybody's heard it. And this one, didn't know it, didn't like it when I heard it. I would discard it.
Stick with us.
sensitive guys with beards, songwriter
See, but it's like
movement,
this.
And NPR darling. If you listen to All Songs Considered, they've been like singing the praises of Justin Vernon for 2 or 3 years. And I particularly like that song, but as a whole.
Which song?
The Holocene.
Holocene, yeah.
The video is beautiful. If you haven't watched the video, just this little blonde boy going around.
It's kind of creepy.
The other thing I'm thinking is I beat these guys up. I feel like, okay, these are what? These are the guys I beat up.
I just need some kind of heartbeat, though. I listened to that Milwaukee, Wisconsin song from the same record, and it was great. I mean, it wasn't, like, the best song I'd heard, but it was much, much, much better, I thought. And this one, it's just, I listened to, like, ambient stuff, and I can't listen to that. It was, like, just too slow for me.
Sure. That, I think that, and there's nothing that pulls you into it. It's just mm-hmm. kind of, like, the surface wash of sound.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that makes me want to keep listening to it. I'm like, okay, I got it. What else you got?
But now I want to hear what, now I feel bad. I want to hear what NPR said about it so that I can reassess my view of it.
Well, I don't always agree with what they say, but it is interesting. Justin Vernon, it was in, let me look at my research, New York Times interview before he was nominated for the Grammy. He was talking about Arcade Fire, and they won the Album of the Year last year. And
everyone's so mad. They kept saying, who is he? And it's like it's a group.
Right.
Who's Arcade Fire?
So the interviewer asked Justin Vernon if he would go if he got nominated or if he won, and he says, and I'm quoting here, I would go and I would get up there and be like, this is for my parents because they supported me, because they would think it'd be stupid of me not to go. But I kind of felt like going up there and being like, everyone should go home. This is ridiculous. But then he gets nominated for 4 categories, and he tweets, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, Best New Artist, Best Alternative Music Album. Thanks, y'all, and the Grammys. So, I don't know. I guess
now he's for sure going.
That's right. He's going to go and have his suit or
be there with bells on.
Well, you're really, really a bad dude, and then you get nominated, and it's like, I guess I'm not so bad anymore, right?
Mrs. Sally Field, you love me. You really love me.
So what categories were you paying attention to, Crystal, in particular?
Well, I'm not consuming music like I used to. I mean, I can remember watching the Grammys was a big thing, and I always knew almost every artist, whatever, but I really had to honestly study up and listen to some tracks, like you said, Lisa, but I guess I'm most invested for this one band in the Best Dance Electronica Album category, and I really want Cut Copy to win for Zonoscope. Have you listened to any of those artists in that category, and what are your thoughts?
Only a little. I mean, that's probably the categories where I would be paying attention to things that are happening, but I think that your experience of, like, wow, I don't consume music in this way, so what gets nominated and what doesn't get nominated is kind of strange to me.
Sure.
It seems just totally arbitrary the way, that we consume music now, but okay, it's cool. Best Dance Recording, and also Best, what was the other category? Best Dance Electronic Album. Pretty much the same nominees. When I look through those, Cut Copy doesn't really super excite me, but I just think when I hear those artists, I think it's good that things that were previously, some sounds that were previously underground are now getting nominated for Grammys. Like, Skrillex is definitely like GABA, drill and bass, mashup stuff that would be like totally underground on really small labels is now, I guess it's kind of popular. Deadmau5 is like minimal techno. It's really, that's cool that is, out there getting nominated. But other like Robin and David Guetta, I mean, Robin for me is like just pop music. I mean, it's good pop music. I know you like Robin. I like that album too, even though I'm not really into the pop music. Or David Guetta is like house, Sounds like house music. Duck Sauce, I think, is just a joke track. So But it's cool that some of those like more underground electronic sounds are being nominated, you know, in Grammy categories. So that's
sure.
cool.
Another category, I was looking at the nominees, and there's a band that I'm really happy that they're nominated, and I hope they win for Best World Music Album. Tenariwen's latest is nominated, and if you've never listened to them, we've got all of their albums on CD in the library's collection, and I encourage you to place a hold. Just an amazing band, and I really want them to win. I didn't know any of the other artists in the world music category, but I'm
where are they from?
Them. They are from. They were the nomads, world. The desert. I wrote a review. Well, I did a podcast review of one of their albums, and I can't remember the exact location. I think it's in the Sahara. Mm. And so they were
so
nomads.
Like
and then they ended up in a relocation camp, and the musicians came together and they kind of formed the band that way. And they came to Bonnaroo last year, I think it was. So, and they're really gaining some worldwide notoriety and hopefully selling a few records or downloads or whatever too. But I'm excited for them.
ديوان ما تنم داغا وداغا نها سمت تيني ريدين تستنم انت دغوت ويمتقلم
And in the folk album category, we've got a little local competition between the Civil Wars and Gillian Welch. And so Civil Wars, Barton Hollow. This is a great album. You're a big fan.
Yeah, I think it's a really good album.
And Gillian Welch, The Harrow and the Harvest, is pretty cool, too. And we have both of those in our collection, too,
yeah,
so you can place holds.
Civil Wars has a little bit of a wait list.
A bajillion holds, right.
Has Gillian Welch won Grammys before? Do you know?
I feel like yes. But
I've seen her at award ceremonies, but I didn't know who she was.
Her writing partner, what's his name?
Oh, David.
All the music people in town are mad at you now.
No, David.
I'm mad at myself.
They don't care. They don't care about me because I like techno. But would it be mean of me to say that Civil Wars, right, probably maybe wouldn't be making records here now if it wasn't for Gillian and David putting out the records?
Rawlings, David Rawlings.
Do you think? Do you think that that's is that fair to say, or no?
It might be a little bit overgeneralizing, but
Now Amanda, we were talking earlier. Sort of prepping for this mm-hmm. podcast, and tell me again the band that you thought.
Well, I feel like the Civil Wars is kind of what either people wish Sugarland was, or that Sugarland wishes they were, because like they're actually a legitimate duo. He sings. It's not just Jennifer Nettles and a guitar guy. So I mean, I really feel like, especially Sugarland's a little bit more contemporary, a little bit more electric. You know, the Civil Wars are a little bit more folk and acoustic and rootsy, but I was listening to it, I'm like, I bet that guy's so much happier than that Christian guy in Sugar Land, because he actually gets to do something besides just be a foil for Jennifer Nettles. Because I went to the Opry this past week on Saturday night, and the Civil Wars had been at the Opry on Thursday night, and I missed them by one night. I was like, oh, that's a one night off. So I almost got to see the Civil Wars, but not quite.
Yeah, they just sold out the Ryman a couple weeks ago. I mean,
they're super hot right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, they're getting
kind of
buzz everywhere.
Group. Yeah.
In Nashville, too. Like, sometimes I just wonder, though, like, they're super-duper hot in Nashville. I don't know how hot they are.
The rest of the world
Nashville.
Goes, what?
Yeah, I don't know the rest of the world. Right. But they also, they also got nominated for Best Country Duo and Group Performance, mm-hmm. too. So mm-hmm. I bet they walk home with one little.
There was somebody else. I can't remember who else is in the. There's some pretty big names in the country duo. Kenny Chesney's in there. Jason Aldean.
I'm just now reading that Eddie Vedder has a ukulele album out.
Yes.
Did you see that in the folk section? Has anybody heard that?
I haven't, but I think he went to Hawaii and got inspired. But
it's crazy. It's crazy.
We got Sting doing ukulele and a couple years ago, or Eddie Vedder doing ukulele, and Sting did that John Dolan album on the lute. So
yeah.
We got some expanding branching horizon.
Out, I guess.
Now, it's interesting to be eligible to get nominated, I looked this up because there was one particular album that I was surprised to not make any nominations. But it was for this year's, your album has to come out between September 1st, 2010 and September 30th, 2011. So once I found that out, I was like, okay, Florence and the Machine, Ceremonials, that will be on next year's. Not this year's, but I was thinking that was pretty awful that she wasn't nominated at all, but that's why. Are there any other artists that were surprised didn't make the cut?
Just that total ignorance of the music scene is really bad. I was interested when I was looking through the catalog today that we have 5 copies of CeeLo's album that's nominated this year that are available. You could check them out today at your branch library.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
5.
You know, that's just the whole thing, too. I think the way I consume music now, like when I buy music, I realize that I am interested in completing the discographies of artists that I already like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm getting to the age where those are not necessarily artists that put out new albums.
True.
I mean, that's the librarian dork in me. But I wanted to get through, I did want to go through the categories and maybe not things that, well, why didn't this get nominated? But
what?
Things that, like, I just was just flabbergasted that it was nominated. There was, like, flabbergasted that they were nominated because they were, like, my least favorite music of the year. So one was Wiz Khalifa's Black and Yellow. He got nominated for Best Rap Performance and Best Rap Song, and Wiz is from Pittsburgh. I love that, and that song is about the colors of the sports teams in Pittsburgh, and even if you, like, sort of stop at the door, all the sort of the homophobia and misogyny that you sort of have to like most contemporary rap music, that song is just totally awful. It's so bad. The beat is so boring. The rap is so bad, and I wanted to love that song. Because finally, it's like Pittsburgh represent on the hip hop scene nationally. And the song is awful.
Yeah, you know what it is. Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow. Yeah, you know what it is. Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow. Yeah, you know what it is. Everything I do, y'all, I do it big. Yeah, screaming that stuff. When I pulled off the lot, that stuff.
And then the other thing that's even, like, more close to home was Best Score Soundtrack for Visual Media, okay? So I think that's, for, like, you know, the best score or soundtrack, you know, for movie,
for
TV
media.
Show, right? So Daft Punk's Tron Legacy score, which had so much hype and I heard got good reviews, and it was just, like, so incredibly boring, and it just was just a total letdown. One of the few things that did come out this year I was excited about. I was just like, yeah, that's awesome. And then it was like, no, it was terrible. I understand what they were going for, but it just ended up sounding really boring. Daft Punk has a lot of good dance records, and you can get them here at the library. But related to that, too, I was like, there's this category called Best Remixed Recording Non-Classical. Which begs the question, what is the classical remix album like? What is there a classical remix? Or is that just like, are there classical albums that have been like a different engineer went in and took the same tapes and did something different? I guess nothing's recorded on tapes anymore. It doesn't really matter. But in that category, right, there was a Fotech remix of a Daft Punk song on the Tron Legacy soundtrack. And Fotech was this old, like, mid-90s drum and bass guy that doesn't really put out records anymore. I was like, yeah, Fotech, he's gonna mess this up, man. He's going to pull, like, crazy, like, Skrillex just dumping some noise on this or, you know, some really awesome beats. No, he cannot say how boring the material is. So that was a letdown. On a happier note, in the more obscure categories, Best Opera Recording, John Adams' Dr. Atomic got nominated, which that is really cool. A lot of electronic elements in that score. That's an opera about Oppenheimer, the guy that creates the atomic bomb. And the guy that wrote the libretto was Peter Sellers. But I don't think that this Peter Sellers, the theater...
Peter Sellers,
the theater director, not the other Peter Sellers. But I think that the one that got nominated actually has only been released on a DVD, right? Mm-hmm. It's a Sony Opera DVD, not mm-hmm. on... You know, not on CD or so. That's weird. Or I don't know how opera works. I don't know how the Opera Grammys operate. But that's
they're
really cool.
On TV.
Yeah. So even though it isn't Peter Sellers staging, which would actually probably be really avant-garde and really cool that debuted in San Francisco, it's the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and the Metropolitan Opera Chorus. So that's, you know, in New York. So I'm not sure what that looked like, but you can get that on DVD.
Well, I think that the Nashville Symphony is doing pieces from Dr. Atomic in the upcoming concert,
nice.
I believe.
I wouldn't be surprised because...
I can't remember exactly, which I think March or April, I can't remember.
Obviously, it must be making ripples in the opera world to have, like, San Francisco debut and then be done, right... at the Met and put out on a DVD. It must have got really good. And the guy that plays the lead, who plays Oppenheimer, sung both. Mm. You know, he sung in San Francisco and in New York, and he's on this DVD.
Yeah. San Francisco's a pretty big opera world. I mean, it's a
yeah.
pretty big market for that. But if you're interested, check out Nashville Symphony, because I think we're doing something. I don't think we're doing the whole score, but I think they're doing, like, something from
I am, because John Adams' Nixon in China is I think it's up there with my favorite opera ever. And I don't understand what it's about, by the way. That's why it's good.
Just sit back and enjoy.
Yes, the beginning of that opera makes sense. And it's about, like, Nixon meeting Mao. But then at the end, it gets into this really crazy psycho dream stuff about Pat Nixon and Madame Mao. It's a really amazing opera. I love that opera. But, which reminds me, too, also kind of sort of related, but not, maybe transitioning into our next segment, Ann Beattie's new Mrs. Nixon novelization about the life of Pat Nixon is sitting on my bedside table and probably will not have enough time to read it. So,
excellent transition.
Yes. And LL Cool J's hosting the Grammys this year. Oh, I'm hungover from the Grammy party. So what are you reading, Amanda?
Just wanted to mention real quick, I picked up a book called Ghost Wave by Chris Dixon. It is a book about surfing, and no, I have never surfed. No, I probably will never surf. But for some reason, I like books about big surf. So Ghost Wave actually is about the Cortez Bank. It's west of San Diego. I don't know how far. It's out in the middle of the ocean. It gets really big waves, and some people surfed it. So if you're looking for a book about surfing, Chris Dixon, Ghost Wave, you should check it out. What are you reading, Brian?
I just picked up Jonathan Lethem's Ecstasy of Influence on a whim, and it's totally hooked me in, and I can't put it down, even though I have other things to read. And this is essays by the novelist Jonathan Lethem, but they're mostly about pop culture, books and comics and movies, his reviews. It's really good. There's a lot of autobiography, too. He's had a really interesting career. He's transitioned from sci-fi into literature, at least according to how he's perceived. And he's also kind of perceived as a New York writer, even though for a decade he, like, worked and published in California. And I think maybe what I really like about it, too, is for years he was a used bookstore clerk. So his relationship with books is very similar to that of a librarian. And one of the best stories, too, is about his relationship with Donna Tartt and Bret Easton Ellis, who he was in their same class at Bennington College, but Lethem actually dropped out and hitchhiked to California, became a used bookstore clerk, and then slowly over in the decades of the past became a successful novelist, where they kind of got really famous really fast. And it's interesting, too, that he gets asked about that a lot because Donna Tartt's novel, Secret History, was about her time at Bennington. And so people always ask him, well, who were you in the Secret History? You know, so if you want to find out, you could read the essay. He's not afraid to put in some of his early work that's actually written quite bad, and the newer work is, like, so much better. And I think he's really brave to show the warts in that. And it kind of, I think the same sort of, like, rough stuff is reflected in his fiction. And it reminded me, too, that when I think back on it now, Chronic City is probably the best novel written about the internet that has been written, you know, in recent years. I think people always talk about the internet how it affects our lives and things like that, and you know, how people, we've talked in this podcast about how people work technology into books, and no one has done that better than Latham in Chronic City. It's good stuff. I recommend it. And from the last time we talked to you about ebooks, I actually read a book on my phone, or at least like half a book on my phone, not this book. I was like, it actually was okay. And it was like, oh, this is fine, you know, and this is really easy to read. But this book, The Ecstasy of Influence, is actually a really like high quality hardback with really good paper. And I like the cover of the graphic design. I'm having a really good book experience. You know, the design of the book as well. The paper is really nice. So it was just interesting. I had this dichotomy after our conversation about e-readers that I had. Like, I read a book on a phone and I liked it. And now I have like an old-fashioned book, quote-unquote old-fashioned book. And it's amazing. I also like to that it's, I'm having this really good old-fashioned book experience with a book that's largely about books and writing. You know, The Ecstasy of Influence by Jonathan Latham. Check it out.
And I was going to say, this is Lisa, I was going to say that I got through Before I Go to Sleep by S.J. Watson, which is a Memento-esque thriller. It's been optioned by Ridley Scott, so it should be a movie probably in the next year or two, about a woman who suffers a traumatic brain injury, so she can't remember from day to day just what's happened. And she's trying to deal with, is her husband who he says he is? Are the people around her and the things that have happened to her what she remembers or what she's been told? I thought it was pretty, and Crystal read it too, I thought it was pretty exciting for having to realize halfway through the book that you have an unreliable narrator. Now, she tells you in the first point that she's unreliable, as in she's having this amnesia. But at the same time, you can't tell whether or not, like, the emotions she's feeling are correct based on her brain injury. So is she being suspicious because she should be suspicious? Is it because of the accident? And so forth. But did you have anything to throw in about it?
I liked it, except I wasn't too pleased with the ending.
It had kind of a Lifetime movie switcheroo at the very end, but I thought, I saw it coming, kind of, but then I wish it had been done in a better way.
Right.
Yeah.
But I could see that it'd be a great movie.
Yeah.
Definitely look forward to that.
Get somebody like Charlotte Rampling, maybe, for like the main
character.
There
you go.
Yeah.
Good casting call.
That was on a lot of year-end best lists.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was Before I Go to Sleep by S.J. Watson.
Also available on audiobook. That's how I ended up reading it.
So did you read Before I Go to Sleep before you went to sleep?
No, it was too scary.
That doesn't seem like a nice
I was mainly cleaning the
sleep.
Kitchen, I think, listening to my audiobook. And
safety in the kitchen.
It's calmer here. I guess that's all I got.
You've been listening to the Popmatic Podcast. If you want to find out more, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
All right, yeah. And I think you have to actually click off the shelf to leave comments on our blog. But on the same blog, you can see Amanda's more in-depth review of
Ghost Wave.
And the author actually left some comments in the comment section, so you can do that too.
Feel free to leave more. We like to hear from you.
And if you listen to this podcast, please write us a positive review on iTunes, because so far only one person has written a review.
It wasn't me.
Was it someone in the building? That's what I was going to say. I was like, I would have
might have been someone at this table.
What's good about leaving us positive reviews at iTunes too is once you get a couple 5 stars, you get bumped up to the top of your category, if only for a short bit. Ooh. Even if you only have a few. So a lot of people would see the podcast if people give it 5 stars. Five Donna Tarts. 5 stars. And that would be good.
It'd be cool if I gave us 5 cars.
We could do with the exposure and the cars.
What would you do? I don't want 5 cars. That'd be horrible.
I just need one. I would share.
Pay the insurance, and where would you park them? And
I already have that problem.
I don't know. I don't want 5. Just saying.